Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
Hi, Cynthia.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I just wanted to make a quick announcement, then I have a question.
Okay.
I just wanted to let people know that, you know, it's Old Home Day weekend in Bellis Falls.
Okay.
I don't know if you'd mentioned that or not.
No, I hadn't.
And, you know, they got the little fair and stuff like that. Then they got the old, they got a truck show that's over at the high school over in Westminster. And then also we'll have the fireworks over in Bellis Falls tonight.
Okay.
So, you know, if anybody's interested in going, that's going to happen.
Okay, and we'll mention that again later.
Great. Who's the person you speak? Who am I speaking with?
Tim. I'm Cynthia. This is Tim Robertson. Our guest is Tim Robertson. Our co-host is Nat Stout.
Okay, I did have a question for Tim.
Sure.
Yes.
My question is, yeah, I know I'm putting my head in the chopping block for this.
No.
I've been in the system, okay, and it stinks, and nobody likes it. The problem I ran into was that, you know, if you made a mistake and it wasn't a crime, you know, it turned out to be a revolving door going in and out and in and out. Wouldn't it make sense just to do away with the parole system, and where a person will get out of their minimus, okay, if they commit a crime, then, you know, they go back and finish up the sentence, and, you know, whatever the crime was, they just, you know, get another sentence. I would think that it would save the state thousands and you know, parole officers make big bucks. They make a lot of money. And it just seems to me just to, you know, if somebody picked up a beer, or if they were late for an appointment. I mean, where's the crime? Come on.
I don't think that's what parole officers do, but...
Well, I've seen both sides of the coin.
Right.
Believe, trust me, I've seen both sides of the coin.
But parole officers are supposed to be helpful to their parolees.
Again, until you've seen both sides of
right.
the coin...
Absolutely.
You know, it's really not what it's cracked up to be. Well, trust me, you know, and it just seems to make more sense to do away with that, and it would, like I said, it would save the state thousands of dollars.
So, you know what I mean? So therefore, if a person had been a bad prisoner and his minimum sentence is up, we let him out anyway. He doesn't have to go through the system.
Well, you know, I mean, work your way through the system, you know, with the halfway house and get a job, and then, you know, once you're able to establish yourself in the community, you know, you're on your own. I'm thinking that, you know, the recidivism rate would certainly cut down.
I would think we would need a parole officer in here to answer these kind of questions. And I am a Vermonter, you know.
Okay.
I was born there.
Okay.
Didn't get out of there till I was four. That's why.
But isn't it kind of silly that, you know, if a guy is late for an appointment, that he should have to go back through that gauntlet?
Oh, okay? I don't think that happens. I didn't get upset if they missed an appointment or late, and I didn't get the idea from the real parole officer that he did. It's just part of the problem that it doesn't always work perfectly, but I'm here to deal with these guys and say, geez, did you get to the AA meeting? Did you get to work every day? Things that are part of what he agreed to when he was paroled out.
Right.
And, you know, you can check with his employer and see if he showed up on time. And
right.
You can't talk to anybody at AA because it's... anonymous.
I'm thinking that it should be the, you know, up to the person themselves whether or not they want to continue on, you know, making a future for themselves, not the parole officer. Hey, but we can agree to disagree.
That's
there
no
you
problem.
Go. Thank you very much for calling. Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
How you doing? Is this Cynthia?
I am Cynthia. I'm doing very well. How about you?
Cynthia, I'm doing well. My name's Sean. I'm from Daytona Beach, Florida. And I was calling in. I obviously don't get your show, so I'm not familiar with the conversation, but I am active in the, well, not active per se, because I haven't moved, but I'm interested in the Free State Project. And I know there's, and even in the Free State Project, you know, there's differences among more of a anarchist-leaning perspective mm-hmm. and a more minarchist-leaning perspective. But, you know, here in Florida, to kind of put some perspective on the conversation, because there's a lot of people in the country that are watching New Hampshire. You know, like me, I'm almost 40. I've never had kids. And, you know, one of the shows I was listening to, you're talking about public schools. And it's just so true. You know, like when it comes to, you know, I have a house here in Florida, and I have to pay property taxes for public education.
Mm-hmm.
It's not voluntary. It's forced. And it's really the gun in the room with regards to government, with regards to everything. I mean, this is really the one issue that unifies libertarians in general, regardless of which side of the philosophy they lean to. And, this is really the driving issue. So, you know, for me, someone in Florida, a bunch of Yankees have come down here and told all of us Southerners how to live. And now that we're the minority, I mean, we're subjected to that. So, and, you know, the Free State Project and the Free Keene, I mean, we're just kind of doing that in reverse as libertarians. You know, we're kind of looking at the perspective, you know, we're kind of scattered all throughout the country. And none of us really like this gun in the room. I mean, we're all good people. We all, you know, want to live in a good society and good communities among peaceful people that aren't aggressive, that don't want to go out and initiate violence against each other, and live in good societies and live good, productive lives. I just want to be in a community that can get the gun out of the room, where everything in this country is just not done under this threat of force, where it's like, you know what, if you don't do it our way, we're the majority.
Well, let me tell you that moving to New Hampshire is not going to get you out of paying for education for other people's children, because you are going to continue to do that in New Hampshire more than any other state, probably.
Well, it really just depends. I mean, you know, the way the decentralized system works is, you know, if you obtain a majority at a city, county, or state level,
has to be at the state level, because New Hampshire doesn't have home rule.
Well, no, and I can appreciate that, and I'm not familiar with all the intricacies of the law, and obviously, I mean, there's steps. I mean, I think libertarians just in general want to we incrementally advocated to this big, humongous, monolithic government. And I don't think anybody I realize that, you know, some of the Keene activists are a little more assertive, you know, maybe come at it a little more impatient approach. And I mean, they're not hurting anybody, so I don't really look, you know, like I'm probably not going to be in the park, and I'm, you know,
God,
I probably
I hope
don't.
Not.
Well, I mean, I don't smoke pot, but I don't condone it. You know what I mean? I don't want somebody to have their house taken from them for smoking a joint.
No, they don't.
You know, I mean, that's, to me, things, this is where, to me, where it gets absurd. I mean, you know, but I get along with people like that. But getting back to your point, you know, it's an incremental thing. I think libertarians in general, at least I do, and a lot of other people I talk to, socialists, Ron Paul type of supporters, you know, we recognize there has to be an incremental transition. But I think there's a definite consistency is, you know, how can we live in a society where we can start taking the gun out of the room, at least?
Okay, you've got 30 seconds to finish up.
No, I you know, I appreciate you really taking the time for my call. Thank
okay.
you very much.
Thank
Tim.
You. Bye-bye. 357-1290, good morning, you're on Talkback.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I was listening to Jim, and I couldn't help but think, what party would I be able to vote for if I believed that presidents should be prosecuted for treason and mass murder and kidnapping?
I have no idea.
Well, you can't vote for the Democratic Party. They don't enforce the law. They expand war. Can't vote for the Republican Party.
It sounds like we're having a free state morning, which is unfortunate. I was hoping we'd be able to talk about the city, what's happening in the city.
Democratic Socialist are.
Right.
Well, you're a free stater.
Yeah, I don't know. The
my
answer
point
is I don't
this.
Know.
May I make my point?
Sure.
There is no party that I can vote for except for Ralph Nader. Common sense, simple common sense, is completely off the table in this entire country. George Orwell was not kidding. It's reality.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's yawning while the dead soldiers come back, and it's all treason. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's all...
So, do you want to get back to my questions?
Yeah, I would. I really would.
Yeah. Good morning. You're on TalkBack.
Hey, good morning, Cynthia and Nat. It's Sam Dodson from freeteen.com.
Just talking about you.
Hey, I heard y'all talking about a couple issues, the drug war and immigration, and kind of how the policy's currently not really working and has some major problems with it. And I'd like to expand on that a little bit. Cynthia, you made the point of illegal versus legal, and you feel that, well, if people are going to come here, they should follow the procedure because there's this process and so on, right?
Right.
Well, do you understand how the process has changed over the last 100 years? I mean, our ancestors came here, somebody wrote their name down wrong in a book, they waited 3 days, and then they were let in, pretty much.
Right.
What's the process today?
Oh, I know. You have
10 years, $40,000 in legal fees, multiple steps and waiting periods and applications, and of course you're dealing with the federal government, so they're going to lose your paperwork and you'll have to completely resubmit all of it, and on, you know, it's a never-ending process. And then what you have to realize is that every time that cost goes up, it just excludes a whole other group of jobs that could have brought somebody in, but now it's become too expensive. And the same thing is true with minimum wage. You know, as soon as they keep, every time they keep raising minimum wage, all that does is eliminate jobs out of the marketplace and creates unemployment. Same thing with all the regulations. Those eliminate people from being able to do some of the things that they would otherwise be able to do and creates unemployment because, you know, they can't hire somebody to do the job because, well, it's illegal now. So, you know, when these so-called illegals, I mean, they're just people, though, come over here, their employers know that they're illegal, so a lot of them are ended up treated very poorly. They're enslaved into their jobs in many cases because the employer knows, hey, I can pick up the phone and call INS and have this person deported or threaten them. There was a story of, like, the National Forest Service hiring people who recruit workers from Mexico, bring them up as part of a legal program, but then they would take their visas and passports and so forth, so that if they tried to leave any time during the duration of the program, they would be treated as illegals, jailed, and sent back and so forth. And they were basically kept in slave camps from the sound of it, from the way that they were being treated, the conditions that they were subjected to. So there's a lot of abuse that comes out of this, and the drug war from Mexico is spilling over the border. There's a sheriff in Arizona, or maybe it's New Mexico, I can't remember. But
Joe Arpaio?
Not Arpaio. Yeah. This is another one where one of the Mexican drug cartels has put a contract out on his life. This is what they do south of the border, and now, because of the increased security, the drug, you know, warriors, I guess, are moving over the border and fighting with the American troops and so forth, and they can't handle it. So, it's creating major problems. Mexico is really kind of collapsing into a failed state. The government there is pretty much losing control. And I would hope that, you know, this could all be ended tomorrow if we'd stop the war on drugs, if we'd stop, you know, living by these imaginary lines drawn on pieces of paper that are known as, you know, the United States or whatever, and just allowed free people to cross borders freely. And I think there are some steps that you guys could take in that direction right here in Keene. I mean, if you look at the ordinances, there's, I'm sure there are all kinds of ordinances on local businesses that could be done away with that would increase the level of freedom, increase the level of employment. I know when it comes to the drug war, you guys have the hookah. You have an ordinance on paraphernalia, which could be repealed and would increase freedom for people that are using drugs and so forth. And in that paraphernalia ordinance, you have hookahs listed, which are not even really associated with cannabis use that much. Those have a long, rich history of their use and so forth, but yet those are illegal and keen to be used in public. So why not start acting locally, removing some of these barriers and creating a more free society?
I think it's basically the state. Everything comes through the state. But I think that they have tried to do that in the state, and eventually it'll succeed. I mean,
well, but I'm talking about local city ordinances where the city of Keene has gone beyond what even the state is saying you can't do, and they're placing additional restrictions on the residents. Open container is another one, and the paraphernalia are both examples of Keene city ordinances that the city council has direct control over that you guys can repeal any Thursday meeting you guys wanted to.
Well,
about 5 minutes.
It's not a single meeting process, of course.
Okay.
But and yes, we do have some authority over some ordinances, but no ordinance can supersede a statute. The statute always takes precedence. We can go a step beyond what the statute requires. We, for instance, if the state statute says that you can't smoke in, well, we can't go beyond what the smoking, that's a poor case. But
right.
The point being that the state may say that you have a municipal speed limit of 30, and this city, I believe, could say, well, we're going to have a speed limit of 25. So we do have some prerogative to do that. But really, if you chipped away at one or two ordinances in the name of a larger cause, that's far less effective than if you had a unanimous council that decided we wanted less government. And unfortunately, you can't make a blanket statement like that without major repercussions in areas outside of the ones you refer to. In other words, we can't just philosophically decimate the ordinances within the city under the name of greater liberty without good cause. I'm talking in circles here, and I apologize
right.
for that. But basically,
no, that's okay. You know, I'm not claiming or suggesting that you go in and decimate them. And I would agree with you. I don't think there are any examples throughout history where people have used voting to vote themselves to freedom. If voting worked, it would be made illegal. What I'm talking about, though, is simply reducing the harm caused by people, caused by the state, by the city of Keene specifically, who are pulled over and found with drugs and found with their little pipe or something that is another charge, another paraphernalia charge, another case.
I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure we don't have the prerogative to change that. I think that's statute.
It's a city ordinance. I'm telling you, it's a Keene city ordinance for both the open container and the paraphernalia.
The open container, and where I got my information is Fred Parcells called about this on Dan Mitchell's show this week, and he was saying that open containers used to be allowed,
yep.
And then people were gathering in groups in the downtown, and they were so rowdy, and they'd get half shot, and then they'd start acting rowdy, and they'd continue drinking there, so that they were disturbing other people in the downtown that were trying to shop or trying to enjoy whatever. And so the council just got together and passed that ordinance, and it was passed because allowing open containers didn't work. And so
I think what didn't work, Cynthia, is allowing public drunkenness, allowing rowdy behavior, disorderly conduct that disturbed the peace of others, allowing harassment and so forth. All those things are already against the law. So, and I think you guys have the right approach to having officers, policemen who are walking around downtown, walking through these crowds. They can, they have kind of a natural calming effect when they go through. They can talk to these people. They can deal with the folks that are causing trouble. But I think the solution that they jumped to at the time was, we have to take away everybody's freedom because there's a few people who are breaking the law here, but the police aren't stopping them, so let's just restrict everyone. I don't know if that's really the answer.
Don't you think there's a better battle to argue than the right to imbibe in public? I mean, really, I understand where you're coming from, but frankly, I'm not one that would really go to bat on for that cause alone. I'm perfectly fine with the privacy of my own home or in an establishment that.
Right.
I don't really feel compelled to imbibe in public. Where's the need to do that?
Well, yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I probably drink 2 to 4 beers in a month, so I don't drink very much at all, but I'm out there supporting them, because it's the issue is really freedom. And, you know, if you're not free to enjoy the beverage of your choice when you're not harming anybody else, then you're not really free.
You know, I'd beg to differ. In my view, with it's in the case of intoxicants of any nature, the first and foremost consideration is public safety.
Right.
And sure, but there's a difference between, you know, someone enjoying a beer where they're not getting intoxicated, where they're not bothering anybody, where there's no harm caused, where they're just enjoying themselves, and you know, it wouldn't be any different than if they drank a cup of coffee.
Maybe we could make a law that you can have an open container with alcohol as long as you don't talk to anybody within 10 feet anyway.
I don't know about talking to anybody, but I'm just saying, you guys do have already all of these laws on the books to address the behavior that you're concerned might come out of drinking. And I agree, there will be people who can't handle it, who will drink too much, and will cause a problem. But you have things to already address that. So I'm just saying, please consider, you know, leaving harmless behavior alone and just focusing your police force on the folks that are causing the problem.
Okay.
In the service.
Okay. And we got to take another call, but thank you for calling. Bye-bye. Good morning, you're on Talkback.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I hear a lot of talk about, you know, the government granting this and granting that, but someday, you know, these grants are bad. I'll tell you why. Just take a guess how much the national debt increases every hour.
Oh, I don't even, well, I know they have a thing in Times Square that tells you how much it's increasing every minute, but I don't want to know.
Well, every hour is $150 million.
That is
$4 billion a day, over $1 trillion a year.
That
now, the whole thing's going to come crashing down, and people, you know, the thing of it is, I think, you know, I know the Red Sox and the Yankees and sports and all this is more important than, you know, talking about open containers on Main Street. You know, that's far more important than, you know, the trivia that I bring in. But, you know, I think it's about time people open up and realize the whole thing's going to come crashing down, because there's no way you can continue to spend. But on the other side of the coin is there are people, friends of the politicians, friends of government, parasites that work for the government, that suck off the poor people that have to work to make a living, that are making huge profits on these processes, because this money's just not going into thin air. This $150 million an hour that is being excess spended, that's excess spending now. That's excess. That money has to be borrowed to pay for is going into somebody's pocket. Doesn't just disappear in thin air.
But I think it's disingenuous to say that all government employees are lining their pockets, because it's not true. I think a lot of this money goes through politicians who send it on to big companies.
Well, no, I don't want to say it's disingenuous at all to say it goes to the parasites that suck off the government, because they get gigantic retirements. They get great medical coverage. If government medical coverage is so bad, how come they can't give it out to the other people?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Shouldn't we all have that kind
of
coverage?
Well, of course. So that's why I'm not being disingenuous. I'm stating facts. I'm simply saying, you know, look at these guys at what they did at Arlington National Cemetery. They knew it was going on for years. You know, about, I mean, that's just disgusting. I can't even really emotionally even talk about it. All the remains of soldiers, American heroes. They knew. They don't even know what they did with them. They bring them into Congress. Well, they're not losing their paychecks. They're still getting their retirements. They just didn't want to be bothered with trying to keep track of everything there, and that's what they were paid to do. But that's what happens when you can be a government official. When I talk government official, I'm talking federal government.
Right.
What I'm talking is there's no accountability. And look at this Charlie Rangel. The same thing. He's pulled all kinds of shady deals. Oh, but they think he should just be allowed to, you know, retire gracefully.
Or who thinks that?
That's what it was said on the news this morning, Matt.
Really?
Do you think Charlie Rangel is a good example of why we need term limits in national government?
Even more so than term limits, I think we'd just clean the house on every single one of them and start fresh.
Right.
They may well be going in that direction this cycle.
Well, yeah, because it's unfortunate because we've got, you know, here I go. I'm going right back to more and more people now I'm finding are getting interest in this local control because they seem that's the only way. I was in a discussion last night with a couple of incredibly knowledgeable people about the corruption in government and how so on and so forth. And I said, you know, it's all just going to come down to home rule because you know what? I says, if I've got a problem, I can talk with you, Cynthia. I can talk with you, Matt, if I have a problem with the way things are going on. But boy, try to get through to anyone in the federal government. You can't. They're doing their own thing. They're lining their own pockets. Government is no longer for the people, by the people. It's government for the government, by the government. And this is why when you're spending this kind of money with all this evil and all this corruption, look at I could go on and on and on. War in Afghanistan, all those men dying, and soldiers, not only men, women. For what? Well, it's lining people's pocket. The military-industrial complex loves it. Look at this oil spill in the Gulf. Do you know how much money BP has put into this $20 billion fund so far? Nothing. Oh, yeah, but they've sold some assets. Well, who did they sell them to? What, their own buddies? They're all tied in together. There's no competition with the oil companies. If there was, you wouldn't allow speculation. You know what? That's one thing. They'll never do it. But oil should not be traded as a commodity.
That's for sure.
Yeah. But they do it.
Well, that's relatively new. They didn't used to, if
exactly.
I'm not mistaken. And it's proven to be a real mistake, for
right.
sure.
Well, no,
right.
no, Matt. I must argue with you. For once, I'm arguing with you. It's not a mistake for the people who have made a profit off it.
Well,
it's
true.
Not
yeah.
a mistake for Goldman Sachs, who should have went bankrupt, that was pushing on the price of oil to $200 a barrel. Yet our tax dollars, our government bailed them out. That's why this whole thing is going to come crashing down unless the people unite and throw these and it's going to have to come back from to home rule.
You know what gets me about this whole bailout thing is it originated with the Bush White House and the former Goldman Sachs Hank I can't remember his last name, but in any case this whole bailout was Republican originated and then it was perpetuated by the Obama administration, and now it's being used by the Republicans as the Republicans are saying, stop the bailouts.
Right.
Kelly Ayotte's got an ad out there, stop the bailouts. Well, guess what? They started with your political party. Right. I don't understand that.
Oh, I do. I do, Matt. It's all corruption.
And the problem is that with anything, the banks or whatever, they got all this money to be bailed out so that they could be whole again. But they're not doing what they were supposed to do with
right.
the money. They're not loaning the money to people. They're not, you know.
And Lord knows their bonuses haven't been affected.
I mean, you know, they're still me first and everybody else last.
You know what? It's no fun talking with you guys. I have nothing to argue about with you. It's no fun.
Except
talking
local.
To you is preaching to the choir.
Except local banks. I don't think
well,
we have a problem.
The only thing is, unfortunately, in our but yes, I totally agree with you about local banks
local
that are
banks.
Locally owned and locally controlled,
right.
which unfortunately not all of our banks in this area that are that
I
way.
I think
but,
we have just two, actually.
But you are absolutely right about the local banks. Yes, that all comes down to, you know, local control.
Right.
Well, listen,
right.
God bless you guys. It's always such a pleasure to talk
well,
with you.
Well, thank you, even
thank
if
you.
We won't argue. Okay, thank you. Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
Good morning, guys. It's Ian with FreeKeen.com.
Hi.
How are you today?
We're fine, thanks.
Morning.
Great. Well, you guys are making some really good points so far in these discussions you've just been having about the federal government and a lot of the corruption issues and the problems with the system. And I think that you've pretty much been spot on. It's the solution that I think that leaves something to be desired. And the idea being, well, just change them out. And even, Nat, you even said that, well, it's not likely that that's going to happen. And it's true. The incumbents get elected at a 90-plus percent re-election rate. So it's pretty unlikely that any significant amount of turnover is going to happen in any given election year. And even if you could change them all out at once, it would still be rearranging the deck chairs of the Titanic because you've got an organization that is, morally bankrupt just based on its nature. I mean, it is essentially the violent monopoly as was actually admitted recently by Barack Obama, and that's what they are. They use force, and they have a monopoly on it, and so they behave as all monopolies behave. So I just wanted to throw out the actual solution, and the earlier caller was referencing it when he said home rule. It seems like a code word for secession. And Nat, you've balked at that before, and I guess I just don't understand, after all the critique that you've had for the federal government, why would you want to keep them around? What is it that they, what value do they add? It seems to me that all they do is act as a parasite and steal money from people and then give it to their buddies in industry. And the idea that that's going to change in any significant way seems pretty absurd.
Well, thank you for inviting my reply. And I can't give you a simple answer. I read history a lot. I love political science and history. And the spectrum, the age of this country shows time and time again the need for a united front, be it economics, be it racial prejudice, be it the spread of Nazism. I'm not going to argue the domino theory because we all know that didn't work. But time and time again, we've seen the need for the nation to come together. And there are causes that make that absolutely essential. So while it would be a great thing to have more control over our lives individually, we sometimes get to that control through the collective, and the collective is large in this case, in the United States. The collective has eradicated poverty in many ways. The collective has eradicated racial prejudice, and the collective has shown that a group of people can work and even battle to come up with a united front ultimately and a common philosophy that benefits the greater good.
Well, it sounds all very fanciful to me. I mean, you keep referring to the collective, but what I see is a group of men and women calling themselves government that are basically helping themselves to people's money and obedience, and in return, they get nothing. The question was asked earlier, I believe it was June Donegan was on earlier, is that right?
Right, she was.
The question was asked earlier about the police, Keene Police the city having some sort of liability in the issue of a drunk driver situation, and as much as it might be nice if the city government or the state or the federal government people actually had liability, they don't have any obligation whatsoever to provide anyone with any services. So, again, it's all very fanciful, these ideas, and I think that people can be helped out on their own. I think that people are very charitable and collectively, if you will help other people that are in need or, you know, repel threats. You mentioned the Nazis. You kind of went down this list of things that you believe are important, and some of those I certainly agree with you on. I just think it's presumptuous to believe that somehow having a group of strange men and women having total control of your life, being able to withdraw as much of your money as they want from you and spend it on whatever they want, is somehow beneficial and would work better than individuals simply deciding on their own to come together for certain purposes. It seems to me that that's what works best. If you look at charities and you look at organizations that operate on a voluntary basis, a consensual basis, you get things done better, they get things done more effectively, and the best part is you get to choose what to support and what not to support. So if I don't want to support going over and blowing people up around the world and killing people, then I won't have to do that. The people that, you know, have that bloodlust can go off and do their thing, I guess. But anyway, thanks, guys, for the time this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you for calling. War by donation? I don't know.